work session on Senate Bill 464, which would be blended into something else we have up for public hearing, up for work session Senate Bill 126. And we have a public hearing scheduled and possible work session Senate Bill 570, House Bill 3365, and House Bill 3497. We will begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 570. And we'll open that public hearing. We have Mr. Waters here. Mr. Graney is here. Mr. Graney, why don't we just let you do the whole thing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Mike Graney, Assistant Director of the Office of Energy. Senate Bill 570 corrects a technical oversight it did not intended when the bill was passed in 1997 that provided a tax credit for individuals who buy premium energy-efficient appliances. And these are appliances that are at least 20% more efficient than the national standards. The program has been very popular. Over 9,000 Oregonians have taken advantage of the tax credit since it was passed. But in the summer of last year, the Department of Revenue told us that there was a problem with the way the law was written and that renters who wanted to purchase efficient appliances were not eligible for the program. Simply the way the law had been drafted. And that was not anything that was ever discussed in 1997 as a policy matter by the committee. It was simply the way the language came out of legislative council in final version. There was an oversight that we missed, and I apologize for that. And as a result, we've had at least 50 renters who acted in good faith and purchased appliances in 1998. Before we found this out, we've had additional ones who would like to do so. What the bill does is simply correct that oversight, makes renters equally eligible if they purchase appliances that are energy efficient and otherwise meet the standards to qualify for the tax credit. The bill has a retroactive date to January 1st, 1998, which was the effective date of the amendments that were adopted in 1997. To allow tax credits for these appliances generally. We worked with the Department of Revenue on this, and they have no objection to that date in order to deal with the small number of taxpayers that are caught in between here.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? Senator Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where specifically does it allow the renter, and how would they claim it on their income tax?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wild, the language on page 2, and I'm not a tax lawyer, but
I think we found it.
But then I want to follow up, please. Okay, so if I'm the landlord and I purchase the appliance, am I allowed to deduct that?
Chairman, Senator Wild, if you're the landlord, you can deduct that under our business energy tax credit program.
That's
different
part of this. Okay.
Different program. Although you could file that with your individual return if you're essentially an individual investing in rental property.
Because I know we've used it and I wanted to make sure we didn't screw up on it. Okay. Thanks.
I can only verify of your use. Second part of that, I don't know.
Okay. So we got
that. Are there, are there other questions?
Good lunch.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 570? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 570. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 570. Recognize the Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move SB 570 to the floor to pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Beyer. Senator Herzog.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Wild.
Aye.
Vote aye. Senate Bill 570 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 570. I see that Senator Nelson is a principal sponsor of this. We could inquire as to whether or not he wants to. I see Senator Beyer is also listed, but if there's a volunteer who wants to intercept this, you'd like to do that?
Sure.
Okay. Then we won't ask those people.
That way we can get some
Senator Wild. We get some more floor time. All right. We have a public hearing on House Bill 3497.
Interesting.
Yep. Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3497 would allow an income tax subtraction for the portion of scholarship awards used for housing expenses.
That's the end of your presentation.
Top
that, Jessica.
Well, a little more in the summary.
Chair of the Board, members of the committee, I won't do much more than that. Simply, the bill, currently, if you're a student and you receive scholarship monies, they are not taxable unless they exceed the amount for tuition and fees. This bill would say if you receive scholarship monies, they are not taxable unless they exceed the amount for tuition, fees, and housing. So it simply exempts scholarship monies or housing from taxation. We have a letter before you from Mr. Eric McKender, who is the student who requested the bill from Oregon State University, a student that has paid taxes on scholarship money.
All right. Are there questions?
Chairman.
Senator Hartung.
Jessica, I'm looking at the committee vote and the floor vote.
Where are you going?
Why, yeah, 58 to 2. However, why would the chairman of Slobeck vote against, or did you hear the debate, the floor debate? Why did he vote against it on the floor?
Chair Miller, Senator Hartung, he was excused.
Yeah. Oh, it is excused.
Yeah, that was the unanimous vote.
Right.
That's probably why there wasn't much for debate.
I was looking at the committee. Okay.
Although, once again, if I carried it, I'm sure I could generate at least one no vote.
Keep go in with 30 and come out.
Thank you, Jessica. If there are no more questions, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3497? If not, close the public hearing on House Bill 3497. Open a work session. House Bill 3497 recognizes the Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move HB 3497 forth to pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves House Bill 3497 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hartung?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Byers?
Aye.
Senator
Miller? Votes aye. House Bill 3497 is passed to the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 3497. Senator Hartung? Would like to carry that bill to the education chair. All right.
I couldn't, but you could.
Spirit in your ear. Mr. Meyer, is Mr. Meyer here? Okay. Well, maybe we'll open up, in fact, we will. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3365.
Yeah. We were right there to move in when we...
It is alleged there are two people who know this bill in detail. Mr. Scherzinger, who is not present, and Mr. Meyer. So if you would give us the benefit of your understanding of this measure, we'd be forever grateful.
Okay. House Bill 3365 deals with county school fund billings by the Department of Education. Currently, the department calculates the special education costs for students in hospital programs, long-term care, Fairview Training Center, and state schools for the deaf and blind. And then those billings are made to the ESD and paid out of the county school fund. If the county school fund is not sufficient to cover the billing, then the costs are prorated to the district in the ESD and come out of the school district state school fund. grant after it's allocated to the district. So it's a direct out of pocket cost to the district when those buildings exceed the county school funds. What the bill does is say rather than build a school district, that the amount exceeding the county school fund dollars would then be taken out of the state school fund prior to the distribution to the district. So it comes off at the top of the state school fund. So that way the district would be the districts that with the county school fund is sufficient are treated similarly to the districts where it's not sufficient by taking it out of the state school fund before the distribution calculation. And this would be first applies to buildings made after August 15, 1999, so it would take effect in the second year of the biennium. But part of the reason for this is that last session the legislature passed a bill that said counties do not have to make contributions to the county school fund anymore beginning in 99-2000. Counties were required to make a contribution of $10 per census child or the amount that they contributed to the county school fund in 1965-66, I think. It was the lower of those two amounts. But the legislature last session said, no, counties don't have to do that anymore, partially in response to Measure 50, reduced property tax revenues to counties. And so the county school fund is going to drop off, and there will be several counties where the buildings will exceed the county school fund in the future. And the revenue impact estimate is about $1.2 million for 2001, I believe it is.
I mean, is there anyone here who wishes to testify on House Bill 3365? Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Lozzie Rhodes with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I hope I'm talking about the right bill. I just walked in.
What bill did you want to talk about?
The bill that allows you to take the state school fund and cover the special ed buildings that aren't covered by the runout or the deleted. We're in favor of that bill. Our superintendent has talked it over, and it's the fairest way to do this. And we encourage you to pass the bill.
Thank you.
Nice tie.
Nice. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 336?
Testify.
You want to testify?
No, I want to speak.
Well, we'll get into a work session.
Okay. I will wait.
Mr. Levy, you are the other expert witness.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Levy with the Portland School District, Jim Scherzinger, our CFO.
Well, look at this.
There he is. Come on up, Jim.
You can introduce him.
Now it's time.
Save me here.
Mm-hmm. 3365.
Jim Scherzinger, Portland Public Schools. You want me to talk?
Yeah, you explain it.
Mr. Meyer has explained it, and you might just give us
It's very hard to be brief, but I will be on this bill. It's a complex situation. Essentially, what the bill does is preserve the current system. Under the current effect of the current system, what happens under current law is that for certain programs, state responsibility programs. These are programs where the state is responsible for funding the kids in a particular school, like the deaf school or the blind school. There's a number of private contractor schools that fall under this category. For these kids, one of the ways of funding those programs is a billing on the county school fund in the area from which the kid comes from. And so what happens under the current system is that for a portion of the cost, a bill is sent in effect to the county school fund. The county school fund, the payment is made out of the county school fund. When that payment is made out of the county school fund, that means there's less money left in the county school fund. So when the funds are distributed out to local districts, there's less money there than there would be otherwise. Well, when that happens, in other words, the district gets less money than it would get otherwise, it reduces their local revenue under the state school fund formula, which means they get more state aid. So that when the payment is made out of the county school fund, it reduces the revenue to the local district. The local district is reimbursed, in effect, by the state school fund. So the practical effect of the current system is that those costs are spread statewide to all school districts through the state school fund. Unfortunately, under Measure 50, one of the things we did, and I'm not saying what we did was bad, but one of the unfortunate effects of it, it was unanticipated. We exempted counties from paying one of the required contributions to the county school fund. And that means that there's going to be less money in the county school fund, which means in some cases there won't be enough money in the county school fund to pay the billing. When that happens, and this generally has not happened up until now, up until next year when the counties start contributing less, when that happens, then the bill instead is sent directly to the school district. And that means the school district pays the bill but doesn't get any reimbursement from the state school fund. So under the current law, what you will have happen is that in those places where the county school fund is inadequate, the local districts will have to pay the bill directly without any reimbursement. And in those places where the county school fund is enough or adequate, then the costs are spread throughout the system on all school districts. So you'll have basically an inequitable situation where some places the local district has to pay and in most of the rest of the state, the costs are spread throughout the whole system. And what this bill does is correct that and spread all of it, for all districts will spread the cost across the system. One final thing to point out is that these kids, again, are state responsibility kids. So the local school district that will be getting these bills is not getting any credit for them under the state school fund formula. They can't count these kids. So, in effect, unless the law is changed, some school districts will end up paying for kids that they can't even count as attending their school district. And this bill avoids that again by, in effect, spreading across the state for all school districts, these billings, the cost of this billing will be spread throughout the system for all districts. Now, that's a complex system, but I think a fair statement of what the bill does.
Thank you very much. Mr. Levy, you...
I couldn't have said it better myself.
You just would have expanded that, sure. Their quiet lady is a little wordier than I am. You're satisfied?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. If there are no questions from the committee members, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3365? And Mr. Rose, was that testimony satisfactory? Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3365. Open up a work session, House Bill 3365. Recognize the Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move HB 3365 for due pass recommendation.
Senator Wilde moves House Bill 3365 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Hyers, Senator Harrington.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilde.
Aye.
Miller.
Both aye. House Bill 3365 is passed to the floor, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3365. And since this related to Measure 50 and Senator Beyer was such an integral part of that group, we will allow him the opportunity to carry this bill and make amends.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, we now have before us a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 126. We have some Fisher Smith and Jeannie Berg Rempel. and I believe you know what the intention of the committee is, and the 126 and 464. All right. We welcome you and be glad to have your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, a union, a public employee union of classified school employees in K-12 and various other educational institutions throughout the state. And I'm here to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 126, and I think that that opposition continues with the amendment. The Dash 1 amendment, which we just received, although I apologize for not having gotten it in time to see what the scope of charitable contributions under Section 170C of the IRS code is, so I don't know the extent of the contributions. Our opposition to this bill is based upon our concern for continued reductions in the general fund, which will translate to ultimately to reductions in K-12 funding for all schools. We feel that it is inappropriate to allow taxpayers to choose the school, the public school, to contribute to and have that delete their obligation for funding K-12 all over the state. And we think that that would be the practical effect of this amendment or of this bill. And so we don't think that it is appropriate to allow taxpayers to pick and choose which school to support, which public school to support, and think that it is inappropriate also if non-public educational institutions qualify under this amendment. And as I said, I apologize for not knowing that under the IRS code. We also very much are opposed to allowing taxpayers to provide contributions to private schools and allow them then to reduce their tax burden to public schools as a result of that contribution.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Senator Starr, a question?
You are aware, I suppose, that the contributions made to a private Christian school might, in fact, meet the requirement for a deduction from taxable income?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, currently you mean Senator?
Yes.
Yes, sir, I do understand that, but my understanding of the amendment and the changes would be that rather than a deduction, credit could be claimed under the bill, which would increase the amount that is reduced in the general fund.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeannie Burgrumpel. I am here representing the Service Employees International Union. We have 28,000 members statewide, and those include both public and private sector employees, as well as workers in both janitorial and food services in the Portland Public Schools. And we're here in opposition to Senate Bill 126 for many of the same reasons that Tricia mentioned. And we feel like we're also concerned about the very large revenue impact of this bill, which is estimated to be, it looks like, $33 million. And concerned about the whole approach that taxpayers choose to give their monies to schools to alleviate some of their tax burden, as opposed to the legislature looking at a general fund and making the decisions themselves about where that money should go. And we believe that you and the legislature should make that decision. And Tim, that's my boss, took a look at the budget, and $1 in general fund goes a variety of places, as you know. About 56 cents of it does go to education, but this takes that $1 and puts all of it to education. And we think that if you believe there should be more money going to education, that you can make those decisions in the budgeting process. And so we're opposed to this bill. And we also believe that this could have an impact within certain school districts that would cause an amount of inequality. School districts that have a richer population are certainly going to have more people able to give to their school and get a tax credit for that. And poor districts will have considerably less families able to, you know, write checks to their schools and claim a tax credit. So we think there would be a sort of uneven impact among the various schools in the state from this. And so those are the reasons we're opposed to it. Do you have any questions?
All right. Are there questions? I would just look for your thinking. And hope you might have some place in your heart for the ambition of 464 principally and in combination with 126, simply expanding God views an opportunity for people to benefit education. The 126 approach indeed allows additional opportunities, and I am sensitive, aware of the fact that there could be some disparity based on the well-being of the district, I suspect, and the opportunity to get patrons to contribute. But as I view this, and the reason I've advocated this for several sessions, is I see it hopefully in addition to a solid funding base that we would provide every district in this state. And I think when you look at, hopefully, the members that will be deciding this in this committee, you would recognize that, at least during the last session, and for some of us during the past two sessions, we have actually exceeded the governor's request for K-12 funding in both of the last two sessions. We're engaged in that discussion now. Hopefully, we can reach a number that does justice for public education. But just so you know what the ambition of this legislation is, to be in addition to speaking for myself, and really an opportunity to let taxpayers, I think, direct additional help, if they believe it is required, to schools.
Mr. Chair, Tricia Smith again. I can appreciate that a great deal. I've often wanted to write a little note with my federal tax forms about certain places I did and didn't want my taxes to go, and haven't done that. Now with the new friendly IRS, maybe I will, but I can say in response that while I do appreciate that intent, and I think that whenever the legislature can encourage people to support their schools, they should do that. And this, I think, could be a positive benefit from this legislation, in that people can see that they're putting their money directly into their particular school. However, with public education K-12 taking about a 30% hit over this decade in available revenues overall, and the discussion being how much of a, this session being how much of a cut we can tolerate again, we think this may be getting the cart before the horse. And as soon as we do have an adequate, stable funding base for K-12, we probably would be in here helping you do this. But at this point, another $33 million out of the next budget cycle is too much money, given the unknowns and very insecure state of K-12 funding.
Thank you very much. I would, and as you depart, just say somewhat circular.
Yeah.
The money that
it's
you say is withdrawn from our projected future revenues is money that is likely directed into a cause you would support. So it's not exactly, again, like it just disappeared from the use of schools. That's where I suspect most of the credit will be used.
Mr. Chair, yes, I agree with you. It probably would be. However, given the vast difference in support in various parts of the state for school systems, the difference between, say, Riverdale and Jervis, and what will happen, how many people will access this bill, I suspect will be dramatically different. And those that are in most need of assistance right now are probably not going to be the winners under this bill.
Well, hope we'll have some evidence to talk about in a couple of years.
Thank you. Senator Wild, did you have a question?
No. I'm okay. It's just originally,
okay. If you want to,
I'll hold.
Work it.
I'll hold.
Okay. And let me see if there's anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 126. If not, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 126. We'll open up close the public hearing, open up a work session, Senate Bill 126. Senator Wild?
It's just originally in discussing these issues, in looking at a deduction on your tax form, I have the feeling, especially if you get a full deduction of any contribution, I think that would benefit the more wealthy districts in the state, and quite likely so. But in looking at a $50 tax credit, I'll tell you, a large portion of the people who work in this state have $50 that they owe to the state at the end of the year. And I can see even lower income people taking advantage of this tax credit. And I think this is a much better route of going. And it's of a size that you don't have to be wealthy in order to participate. And so this wouldn't necessarily help out the wealthier districts disproportionately, and that's why I'm really interested in this at this size, because I think it's really well done.
Thank you. Thank you. The other comments,
I just got on the tail end of the Vice Chair's comments, and I'd like to also say that I believe that demographics of private school parents pretty well matches financially the demographics of the public school, and that these parents who might be contributing are going to match the population as a whole in general. And for some of them, $100 contribution is a stretch, but they've been willing to make that kind of commitment for the welfare of their children. And so I strongly believe that this is where we ought to be going.
Thank you. Well, the chair would move the dash one. You're looking at me.
Mr. Chair, for the consideration of the committee, it has been brought to my attention that this might be unclear regarding a technical issue, specifically the case of a married taxpayer filing separate returns. So it was the intention of the committee that taxpayer should get those two taxpayers should each get a $50 credit, or whether the credit should be divided between the two. For example, by setting a $25 max, or in the case of a taxpayer who's married filing separate returns.
It would have to go back.
Senator Wild,
you don't want to penalize somebody for filing a joint return. I mean, that's pretty bad tax policy. If you pick out one small area of tax law and you create another penalty for filing jointly, which is what you'd do if you allowed each of them to have $50 if they filed separately, you would have to divide it by two and have $25 for each return.
Or the question here is in lines 9 and 10.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
The amount, maximum amount. In fact, the chair would move the dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 126 there before. We're discussing lines 9 and 10. Phrase, the maximum amount of credit that a taxpayer may claim under this section for the tax year is $50. And the question is, I suspect that taxpayer meaning, looking at the filing that came in, I think it would be my desire, wait the committee's response, but my intention would be each individual taxpayer, meaning if it's a joint filing, both each individual person, whether filing jointly
a joint would be 100 in effect.
That would be
English would be
preference.
Okay. And that, there's no penalty.
Now, is this not well stated to represent that view, or
that seems to represent the question? Or
perhaps something we could say with more clarity when it reaches the House? We need an amendment.
You could probably do that, Mr. Chair. On the, I think the language on line 9 where it says taxpayer generally means filer or per return, but there could be some ambiguity there. Although maybe something that you could take care of on the other side by specific, specific amendments. And just also the allowing a $50 credit per tax or per individual on a joint return would increase the revenue impact fairly substantially compared to what I've presented here.
Ms. Brown.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Susan Brown, the Department of Revenue. This was an issue we did raise with Mr. Waters because we wanted to be clear about what your intent was. If we're talking about, as the chair is indicating, if you had married couple filing jointly, would they get $50, or did you see each person getting $50? And if you're married filing separately, would each half of the couple get $50? So we just wanted to be clear on that, and we can certainly work on the House by getting language to monitor what your intent is. But with the language and what it wasn't real clear what you had in mind as to whether you're doing it with an individual or for a filing. That was the question we had on it.
Well, I'm going to say I wanted to make sure each taxpayer received credit for their contribution, but if the committee was desirous of limiting the credit to $25 per individual, then this would work.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had suggested some language that's out of one of the other credits that talks about the total contribution not to exceed $50 on a separate return and the total contribution not to exceed $100 on the joint return, if that's what you wanted to do, something similar to that, if that's your intent, or if you just want it for the individual filing, we can certainly work with the language on that, too. I think we could work with Mr. Waters and Legislative Council to get the change if you have it conceptually what you want.
Senator Arca.
Mr. Waters, I understand that you calculated cost based on the filer, and that would mean whether it was a joint with two people or a single filing.
That's
so if we separated, allowed a joint filing, two people, well, that would change the revenue impact considerably, right?
That's correct. So then I would assume that a joint filer could, a joint return could get up to $100 credit.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go at it maybe more gradually than
50 each.
Than 50 each is what I'm asked to. And what Mr. Waters said about the single $50 for the joint, $50 would be my preference at the point.
Would be a 25-25 or 50? Senator Starr?
We have a $100 for a couple tax credits for political contribution, I believe.
Right now we do.
And what does that lead to in lost revenue?
$8.1 million. Is that per year?
How can we suppose that a tax credit such as this then would lead to $68 million and much more if we allow it for
more possible? Not our big part. Schools versus politicians?
Yeah, I'd give to a school.
Now wait a minute.
Politicians
have to give to. Give us some rationale. Help me to understand this.
Mm-hmm. Start on the bottom of the impact statement. It relates some current data or current as we have. In the 1996, personal income taxpayers claimed about $944 million in itemized deductions for charitable contributions. And those are the kinds of contributions that would be eligible for the credit under this amendment. And the numbers of taxpayers who claimed charitable deductions in 1996 was in excess of 400,000.
Well, I was certainly one of those, and during that period I had 46 charities that I had on my list. And as it turns out, not one of them would have qualified for this particular tax deduction. I think it's a real stretch to think that we're going to move all of the contributions or a major share of the contributions toward this kind of a donation.
Senator Carter, the Dash 1 amendments say that basically any contribution that qualifies as an itemized deduction under Internal Revenue Code Section 170C would be eligible for the credit. So,
broad class.
We need to sharpen that definition. It was...
Well, that was the problem. The more we... Oh, that's true. The more we sharpen that definition, the more we get into the legal problem of contributions to a religious organization. And if it's a broad class, then you can side skirt or run around that in a way. But if you sharpen it, you probably won't be able to allow the contributions under the Oregon Constitution to charitable or to religious organizations. So under the federal constitution, yes, you could, but not under the state. And so that is partly why it's state of broad class.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Well, that was well played. Also,
I
misspoke earlier because you don't need a tax liability in order to take a credit. And so, I mean, low-income people could still take it regardless of whether they have an existing tax liability. You get a return on a credit.
Refund?
Yes. Okay. Well, in that case, you do have to have a tax return, but most everybody will have a $50 tax burden.
Pretty easy to get one of them.
We make it very easy to get that $50 tax burden. So,
in addition, this credit would not be available only to those who filed a claim. Itemized thing already made. It would be available to everyone. Those who claim standard exemptions and all first-time corporations.
I think the 25, 25, or 50 is for $68 million next biennium, which I think is actually either in line or even mildly conservative.
Well,
we're spinning a little bit.
What I think might be advisable, since Mr. Warner said we can meet at least once more.
Ooh, that was nice.
If we probably got out and posted a 126 for tomorrow, there's a good chance if we posted it for after 4 o'clock, and there's a good chance given our schedule tomorrow that we might go at least until 4 o'clock. We're able to take one bill per minute. It's going to be a long schedule. When you look at the revised edition,
So
I think that might be advisable, and we'll have a little more opportunity to understand the IRC Section 170 and see its scope and breadth. I also would like to have some discussion about the notion we had earlier on 464, and that was limiting these opportunities to individuals. I don't know how much the corporate impacts your impact statement. What do you have?
Not much.
The corporations are not big in this?
No, they're subject to the same contribution limit, the same credit limit, and they're less than 20,000 net positive income earning B corporation. So they're a small part of this.
We'll have a little time to discuss this. We'll put it on tomorrow's agenda again, and we'll hopefully come to some conclusion, although tomorrow is our last scheduled opportunity. The President of the Senate has given this committee until Friday to wrap up our business, and this time we do not have a Friday meeting scheduled, and I don't anticipate that we will. So, is there anything further to come before the committee? Don't you getting permission for us to adjourn? There's nothing further. We are adjourned.
Thank you.